Friday at the start of round eight features Richmond and Geelong. So the grand final rematch, the personnel has changed significantly through injury and the like on both fronts, but the intrigue will be as rich as it has been in recent times. It's loaded in the Tigers' favour, six of the past seven. Can the Cats ease that stranglehold tonight? On AFL Nation, you're with Jared Waitley, Anthony Hudson, Jared Healy and Nick Del Santo. And over the past 24 hours, the body count has continued to mount at Collingwood in the aftermath of a disastrous off-season. So first to go was the GM of footy, Jeff Walsh, Eddie Maguire, the president, and now the list manager, Ned Guy. His resignation, having initially been resisted 6 months ago, was accepted, which leaves only the CEO and the coach. And sometimes when you have a period that is just so disastrous, it's very hard to survive.
Well, I think that's true. And up until last week, it looked as if the energy in the group was sustainable. And therefore, that flag doesn't get raised. Lee Matthews, he's very blunt about this. He's seen this happen many, many times. Very logical about it. That sometimes you just need change for change's sake. I mean, it's just as simple as that. And the easiest way to change is to change the coach. And I think most people in footy understand when that time comes. I don't think it's there at Collingwood at the present time. Interestingly, Matt Rendell, talking to the pipe during the week, he thought it was pretty clear it was. So I think Bucks will know if he thinks that the place needs is a change, and I think Graham Wright will know that as well. But that's really the remaining question as to, does change need to occur?
Well, you look at the way the last week has unfolded with Ned Guy in particular, and he was the fall guy when we go back to the trade period, and maybe rightly so. Maybe he's the front man, and the way that he presented to the media and gave that confusing explanation about everything and the missed messages or inconsistent messages, it's hard to actually articulate or know exactly what happened during that period of time. The facts are they've made a lot of changes. Now they're not playing good football. That's what the fans are seeing. That's what the members are seeing. So they are crying out for something different. For Graham Wright to then come out and say, well, he knew that Ned Guy was going to be moving on at some stage, I don't know how that all plays out. You guys have probably got a better insight and knowledge on that particular part. But what I will say about the whole thing is change can be good. Now, whether it needs to be everybody and all at once, and that may include Bucks in coming weeks or the remainder of the year, particularly from a playing group, things need to change, because this group that we've known for the last 5 to 8 years and watched all these young guys grow up and be successful in their own right, that needs to change, because the evidence that we're seeing from week to week hasn't been up to AFL standard. And it hasn't been more prevalent than what it was last week. So that's what we're seeing. This change on all fronts that need to come as a result.
So Ned Guy's period starts with Dane Beams. And the most interesting words that were written about this was Michael Gleeson's piece today. I think he broke the story, and he wrote that deal was done on the basis that Beams was a top 10 midfield talent in the league coming into a side that was a kick off a premiership, but also with significant pressure from the board to bring the former Magpies premiership player back to the club from Brisbane. And there is an element in all of this of the whodunit on a few fronts, and it does date back to Beams, and that's the first time I've read that reference. And if you're looking to define significant pressure from the board, if you read between the lines, that's straight out Eddie Maguire. Mm. There's nobody else on the board who would wield such influence as to be able to apply significant pressure to get Beams back to the club.
It's hard to read that par any other way. I think that's fair. I mean, at the time, I thought it was widely speculated that the players convinced Bucks about the merit of bringing him back. But it's hard to know without asking Bucks, and whether or not he'd go public with that, I don't know. But it was a big price to pay, and I think it's fair to say that Brisbane were very happy with the result.
Mm. He was a great player off the back of his last year at the Brisbane Lions. There's no doubting about that. The bit that concerns me is because you have to bring him back because he is a past premiership player. You can bring him back on the merit that he's a great player and you were a kickoff. I accept all of that. But when you're bringing back the emotional attachment to it, that's where I feel like it gets blurred a little bit.
The risks were known, though, too, weren't they?
The what, sorry?
Well, some of the risks of things that Dane was going through were known. So it wasn't without risk.
Well, no one does more due diligence.
It was the price paid, really, in a way.
No one does more due diligence on the possibility of bringing in a young recruit, a 17, 18-year-old, or a player from another club, and they've had him at their football club previously, so they knew all the stories and everything that was coming with Dane Beams at that time. So
you make the investment and, you know, you get what you get.
But I think Hutto's absolutely nailed it. I mean, I don't know anybody who wouldn't have welcomed Dane Beams back into their club, particularly when, I mean, I can remember my thoughts thinking, gee, Collingwood, how they're almost certainties for the premiership with Dane Beams coming back into that midfield that was already chock full of senior players and kids like Stevenson coming back to the club. Having a burgeoning young career, even though it fell apart last year. But as you rightly point out, Hutto, what do you pay for it? Two first round draft picks means that you're mortgaging your future for this one crack at the flag, and that would appear, based on all the fallout from the contracts, that pretty clearly that was their strategy. We're going to win this flag, and we'll worry about the future down the track.
And then the future smacked them in the face really quickly, and it's costing everyone their jobs. The other part to it is Mick Warner's written another piece tonight around the Jeff Brown push, which he says is gaining momentum. They are putting together a rival boards, and there are three possibilities. One, a bloodless handover. Two, the AGM at the end of this year, the start of next, or an extraordinary general meeting to roll the current board.
Yes, no one knows how that's going to go, but pretty clearly Jeff Brown's preferred model is a bloodless coup. Now, what role Eddie can play in this, I don't know, but a bloodless coup would really be the only way that it's going to be immediately successful. It's going to be difficult otherwise.
Does it have to happen before the decision on the coach is made, if it's going to happen? Is that a factor?
Well, I think they would be having discussions. If they were anticipating taking over, I think they'd be having discussions. I mean, it's not as if Craig Kelly and Jeff Brown are distant. Mm. They're pretty close friends as we speak, and clearly Bucks would be in the camp as well.
Yeah. But, I mean, from a club point of view, it would be crazy if they made a decision one way or another on Bucks and then the board is tipped out 3 months later.
I hear you're going the reverse on what I was saying. Yeah, that's a fair point too. But how do you actually do that, Hutto?
I don't know. That's a good. I mean, it's only through a bloodless coup, or with the threat that if you don't, we're going to do it.
But they are colliding forces. If the bloodless coup comes post season, and they've already said they're going to discuss Bucks' future beforehand.
Yeah, exactly.
Then if they appoint him and he wants to go on, well, then there's an issue. But if not, well, then there's no issue.
How much of it gets hypercharged if they lose to North Melbourne tomorrow?
Well, I think you can answer your own question, Jared. I think I know what you'd be leading with on Monday. Yeah. And you've led with them a few times, but I think we'd all find a little bit of something new in this one.
And it was so telling that Bucks at his press conference right from the start, apart from trying to avoid a lot of the discussion, was we're going back to what we know, which is defence. Yeah. We're going to fix our defence and the rest will take care of itself.
Well, I think it's a good starting point. You know, it was no problems. Have a crack with Darcy Moore. I think they had 2.5-3 years of trialling whether Darcy Moore was a forward, and I know he had one or two games where he kicked a few goals, but he never looked comfortable there, and I think he's never really played that well as a forward in a system. He may well have done it when it was just under 18s and you're just going out there and playing on ability, but in a system he looked lost to me many, many, many times. And in the back line, it's see ball, get ball. Mm-hmm. You can look at your player. You can have your player in your peripheral vision, and you can just go for the football. And that's the way he has dominated that position. He's a brilliant backman. And I don't think that they've got time to be worrying about whether or not he can, you know, prove the doubters wrong. Just go back and play fullback, particularly with Howe out there.